This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at worldsweeper.com, and I am speaking with Larry Dyke. Larry is the co-founder of Masco Sweepers. I am talking to him about how Masco got started. They were very early pioneers in the parking lot sweeping industry and have grown to be a considerable force in that industry today in 2016 when this interview is being held. And Larry, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, tell me when you first got the idea to build a parking lot sweeper and a little bit about Leonard as well.
Well, in probably in 1974, 75, I had just moved from Oregon to California, was going to San Jose State University, and my friend and I started building boat trailers. He was a boat racer, and I was always an old car enthusiast, and when I moved from Oregon to California, I became very interested in these, what they call them, flat-bottom boats for water skiing, speed skiing, and racing. So when I was building these trailers, a guy came in, and his name was Leonard Vella, and he was in the sweeping business in San Jose with his partner, Frank Dorsa. And they had ride-on sweepers on trailers, and they had a few larger Temco sweepers. So sweeping parking lots was quite difficult. He grew to the point where he had probably 15 trucks, 15 trailers, and tenant sweepers, which were really hard to sweep. You had to drive your truck, unload the sweeper, drive it around a parking lot at, you know, 2-3 miles an hour in the middle of the night, trying to sweep litter. These sweepers really weren't capable of doing. So in the meantime, he was racing these boats and got to be friends with me and saw that we had the ability to build stuff. And he said, hey, how'd you like to go to a boat race with me? Or water ski. It was actually water skiing competition. And I said, yeah. So we became friends, and one thing led to another. And he said, you know, what I really need is a small parking lot sweeper that I could put on a truck, and we could be much more efficient. In those days, Ford Couriers were the smallest pickup that you could buy, a little four-cylinder, very lightweight truck. So I said, well, I could build one of them. And in the meantime, I became a shop teacher at San Jose High School, and my position was teaching metal shop and auto shop. So it was a natural for me to work with metal, work with engines, and that was my joy. So I taught school for 10 years at San Jose High School. And during that time, in the afternoon, I rented a shop, and Leonard and I started working on this sweeper. Primarily the first one, I think I built 80% of it in my garage. And we put it on a small Ford Ranger, a Courier, and had a Wisconsin two-cylinder motor on it. And he experimented with it and said, you know what, I think this thing will work. It was very simple. Probably today parking lots could be swept the same way, but as we know, it's become much more complicated. So we built one, and he said, you know, I think I want another one. And it ended up, we built 10 of them for him. And it changed the entire complexity of his operation because he was able to use less equipment. He was much more efficient, and so we started doing that, people seen him, and he was very instrumental in some of the early meetings we had around the Bay Area of getting sweeper people together and just basically talking about sweeping. And we started the first sweeping association with a fellow that we hired, Jim Mills. That's kind of what started our marketing. He says, you know, Larry, I think we could make a business out of this. So we joined with his partner, Frank Dorsa, and we incorporated in 1976 and had a small shop, and we started building two types of sweeper. One we mounted on the truck, one we made so we could slide it into the truck, which we called our 2200 model, which we actually still build, and not too many, but we still build those today. So one thing led to another. Then the Toyota came out. Later on, we moved to the dual-wheel Toyota, which was really a great little truck for us. And one thing led to another. We went to our first pavement maintenance show. I believe it was in Nashville. and that kind of got us some attention. I think New Orleans was the first show we went to, and Temco and some of the other companies were in there, and they had bigger sweepers, and we had this small little, I think it was a Datsun with a round tank on, and they called Leonard and I the tin can sweeper people. And they said, oh, yeah, those guys, yeah, they just got a little tin can on the back of a truck. Well, it was funny because it caught on, and we started selling them. We opened up a dealer in L.A. Named Bob Benge, who has passed away, but really helped us get our foot in the marketplace in L.A. And from there, we kept developing, and we are today. And then one of the things that we did that was kind of unique is listening to the people who work for Leonard, who swept, said, you know what, the biggest problem we have with these air sweepers, when the sweeping head is in the middle, they won't pick up a nail. So the nails would blow across the head, and they come out underneath the front, the back tire, and the flaps would stand the nail on end, and the tires would drive over, and they'd get a flat. And there's nothing worse than fixing a flat tire in the middle of the night when you can't see what you're doing. Half the time your spare is flat, became a real problem. So our customer said, why don't you try putting that sweeping head in the back? And the way that we built our hopper, being a round tank, it was susceptible to that, and it worked out really well. So I think from that point forward, we have been kind of known as the company that has the sweeping head in the rear. And we eliminated flat tires. The dust that a sweeper made stays behind the sweeper instead of coming up through the cab. We noticed that the sweeping trucks were much cleaner when they came in. So we have stayed with that rear head throughout these years, and it's become a trademark for us. Also, with the head in the center, it's hard to raise it up high enough on the smaller trucks. So when you go in and out of a parking lot, the head would scrape, the skid shoes would hit, and it caused a lot of damage. With the head in the rear, we can go in and out of shopping centers much easier. And also, for maintenance, it became much easier for the operator to remove the head, to reflap it, or to even check to see if the flaps are on the ground, and for making head adjustments. When the head is in the center, they can't see under there, so half the time they just keep driving it, and the flaps are not on the ground, and the air blows out underneath the truck, and they don't sweep as well. So for the maintenance for the operator, the rear head became something that was much, much easier for them to work with. And then I think the next big change for us was going to water-cooled engines. Now have gotten pretty sophisticated. We now put Tier 4 engines on that have to be smog approved. It's become much, much more complicated than years past. And the other big change was moving from steel to stainless steel. Rust is always a factor in the East Coast for sweepers, and through our customers complaining of rust, we now build almost 100% of our sweeper is built out of stainless steel. And the engine that we now presently run is four-cylinder Kubotas and air-cooled Kohler motors. And they've been approved, and they're very successful, very low maintenance, and work out really well for us. Another thing that's unique about our sweepers, we have never belt-driven our fan. We have always developed and spent a lot of time engineering to run our fans directly from a stub shaft off the engine. And that has eliminated a lot of maintenance, smoother operation, and makes it very efficient when it's mounted on the sweeper, because we don't have belts that are out of line and have to be changed and make noise. And it just is a better fit for a sweeper to run directly off the engine. So that probably, and then through the years, we have moved our company from San Jose to Lodi, where we manufacture for quite some years, and my son took over the operations of manufacturing, David Dyke, and he lives in Elk Grove. We kind of wanted to move towards that area, towards Sacramento, because there's a large growth factor there. So he has moved the manufacturing now to Elk Grove. My daughter, Lisa Magabit, runs my marketing department, and she runs that out of San Jose, and we just recently moved that store, and we have a nice set of facilities where we fix all types of sweepers. Nighthawks, we do a lot of work on Nighthawks, Temcos, and have developed quite an interest in the broom sweeper business. We have been dealers for, we branched out with Sweeprite. We were the first dealer for Sweeprite for Les Alasco. We developed his, we called it the 1100. We put him on Isuzu trucks, and that was, again, fostered by Leonard Vella because of his interest developing universal sweepers to street sweeping. So that was a step and a diversion for our company, but our main bread and butter has always been our 1600 parking lot sweeper, which is, and parts department, which has been very, very steady throughout the years, very dedicated customers. I would say that 80% of our sales are repeat sales, which is really nice. People like the product. They stay with it. It's simple to operate, and it's really what is all that's needed when you sweep a Kmart, Home Depot, shopping centers. They are people that do not want to pay a lot of money. They want the best price, so our contractors have to figure out the cheapest way to sweep their parking lots and still make a living, which is always a real tough job.
That's getting tougher all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, that's an ongoing problem. One of the reasons we started the Sweeping Association way back then was to try to get these people together to, you know, to show them that there are certain costs involved and they have to stay up with it and change those costs, and if they all are willing to do that together, the industry could survive. And that's been a real, real fight because new people come into the business, they're unaware of what the last guy struggled, and they think by taking his account for a little less money, they can get started. And that's really not the way to take an account. If you're going to take an account, you should get more money and tell the person that you're going to do a better job. But it seems to go the other way. If the other guy swept the account for $100, they think for $80 they can get the account. And most likely the guy was doing it for $100 wasn't making any money. So once this happens two or three times, it spirals down to where either the operator has to cheat on the account or he has to do less work because there's no way he can do it for less money than the last guy did it for. And that's a real, real tough thing to change in our industry.
Well, I think we're facing that, you know, even more today with third-party vendors. But, you know, as also director of the World Sweeping Association, which I founded, I know that we fight exactly the same battle today. You know, we have a lot of information out there that designed to try to get contractors to figure out what their costs are and just say no, as one of my advisory board members, Dave Ross, says. You know, you just have to learn to say no and what your costs are and know that you're making money. Leonard Vella went on to be really the same kind of growth that you saw in making sweepers. He went on to do as a sweeping contractor, right?
Yes. I bought him out when his son, Joey Vella, and his daughter, Gina Vella, took over his business. And David and Lisa really are the followers in my company. We felt it was a good idea for us to separate to be simpler. And that was really a great thing that we did. We switched our businesses to where I owned Masco Sweepers and he owned Universal Sweepers. And Frank Dorsa moved on to a business that he worked in, was which is car washes. So yeah, it worked out really well for us. And since then, he has become probably one of the largest parking or street sweeping companies. Owns several companies between Phoenix, Reno, San Jose, Stockton, Sacramento. He has probably running over 100 street sweepers at this time. Some of them are union operations, some of them are not. So he has really fostered a great impact into the industry.
Well, you both have in your own ways. There's no question about that. One of the things that you've done is really, it's kind of like the Colonel Sanders model when I was growing up. You know, we do chicken right, and, you know, just focusing on that on that one thing, and you haven't, with small exception on these what's now Superior Roads, used to be Sweep Right, going to the little broom sweepers. You know, you've really stayed with your parking lot sweeping and just kept at it. You don't have a whole lot of models to deal with, and you just keep clicking along with something that's working for you.
We experimented with getting larger. We got quite large at one time, being a dealer for broom sweepers for Sweep Right. It was very complicated, very hard to service all types of customers. But our bread and butter has always come back to us with our parking lot sweeper and staying with the smaller sweeper. That's really the key. Toyota was a big factor in our company. Our customers felt that no matter what the truck cost, they would buy it because it would outlast anything on the market. And we went through a lot of revolutions with the Toyota. They went from the dual wheel to the T100, then to the Tundra, and now the larger Tundra, which was a great truck, but they quit building the single cab truck, is what we need. They want to build all extended cab trucks. So now we've teamed up with Chevrolet and some Fords, and they've been great. The newer trucks are much better than they were in the old days for transmission, front ends, and the Chevrolet has worked out, and GMC also have worked out great for us. We've really had very little problems, and our customers now has accepted those, and that's probably our future is with Chevrolet. And the big key thing is that single cab truck. They don't sell a lot of single cab trucks, and so therefore it's not a priority with them to have them, and it's always a hassle getting that type of a truck. The three-quarter ton, the one-tons are available, but then you get into dual wheels, you get into much more expense to operate. And again, it goes back to, it's like buying a boat. If you're really fishing on a small lake, do you really need a monster cabin cruiser? And that was kind of, you know, I've always been a boater, and I always related up to my customers that that's how they should look at it. If you really just need a small boat, why are you buying such a big one? It's harder to put in the water. It's clumsy. Doesn't work for what you want it to do. Or same thing in a parking lot. What you're doing is driving around in circles at 5 miles an hour trying to pick up bottles and litter. You're not sweeping a street. You're not on an open road, and you're not trying to remove, you know, 4 pounds of sand from a snowstorm. You're trying to sweep litter. So that's what we have always listened to our customer, tried to give him what he needed to do what he's trying to do, not what our theory is. We always tried to stay with our customer's interests.
And how do you market? I know that you really have a strong market share in the southwest part of the country, and then a lesser market share kind of in the northeast, eastern sides, but that's an expanding market too for you. How do you market into those areas?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of seed marketing is a term we always use. We've sold sweepers in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Chicago. We have customers in probably Charlotte, you know, all of these areas. And we've had some representation. We had a fellow, Wayne Schmidt, that lives in Atlanta, do a lot of work for us. We've had representatives, Dan Ribbage in Charlotte. So we've always had people that helped us represent our sweeper, and these are usually people that knew the sweeping industry or were in the sweeping company business. And when people would see these sweepers out there, you know, when you sell one in an area, you sell another one. And that's kind of how it works. People see it, they ask questions, and how does it work? Oh, it works great. Same way in Seattle and Portland. We branched out farther than California. And in fact, California probably is the least marketing area that we do right now, which is hard to believe, but the LA market is kind of fickled, and since it slowed down, it really has not come back in what we know as the heydays of the 80s and the 90s. So
right.
That market will come back. What?
I think that whole industry is that. It just isn't what it used to be, but I think it is coming back.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it takes a long time, but we probably were the last industry really to recover, and we're seeing a recovery now, in that area of our business. Street sweeping has seemed like it has kind of advanced a little bit more. More cities are going to contract sweeping, and some cities are, farming out even their parking lots. So, yeah, we're seeing some growth in those areas, but it has been somewhat slow.
Let's talk about that association that you founded. Who were some of the other people that were at that that first meeting, and how did that fare? And I know that association, my understanding is that then that went along, and then it became another name and another name, and I've kind of been around since that progression to how that works. But what was the first meeting? I've kind of heard some different lore about the first meeting of the first association out there that you set up.
Well, I'd have to go back to some of my archives files, but I believe that either in San Jose or it could have been in Oakland where we had the first meeting, and we had quite a representation of parking lot sweepers. I know Schwartz had a representative, or Bob Schwartz himself may have been there for that meeting.
I think maybe Carl Austin went out for that too.
Yeah, right. I'm having a hard time recalling some of those fellows.
Sure.
And then we came up with a, we had monthly meetings, and then they had, they came up, Jim Mills started a magazine, a newspaper that gave a lot of information out, and then we were represented in some of the early equipment shows. I think the most fun that I ever had for equipment shows was the ones we had in Nashville in the old boxing arena there. It was really cool. It was fairly new. And we had demonstrations. We had some shows in Vegas where we had demonstrations going on. It was a very grassroots part of parking lot sweeping because it was just coming out where sweepers were available, and everybody was interested who did sweeping is to step up from, doing it with a backpack blower to a billy goat, tenant sweeper, which was never designed to sweep an outdoor parking lot. So it was really fun because it was, introducing something that was new in the world, and the shows were very exciting, and they're much different now. Now we have, very large corporations that go to these shows. They're very expensive, and we don't feel like the guy that does park, especially for Southern California, the shopping center guys do not attend these meetings. We have taken polls at every sweeper show we ever went to. Very, very few parking lot representatives come to those. Normally it's guys that do parking lots and street sweeping because they are a more organized business. They're able to get away from their business, and those are the guys that come to the equipment shows.
Right, and they also are the ones that are doing lots of other things too because it pays
right,
them.
Exactly.
Because, they go to see seal coaters and stripers. And I agree with that,
right.
What you're saying with the demonstrations. I'd like to see hands-on demonstrations at all the shows, and you just you don't see them. I was trying to think of the name of the person that started the shows, and I think that was Bob Waltering.
Right. He was very instrumental in putting those shows on and some of the early publications that came out. I have some of them early publications. I believe that, when we moved our shop, I tried to put a lot of those old files together, but I did save some of those early advertisements. It was pretty cool to look at some of that stuff. That it's kind of like in the car business, looking at a Model A and a Model T.
Well, it would be, and it'd be fun to scan some of that stuff. And well, we should arrange to get that done. To also to people that have been in the industry a long time, you started off as Mr. Air. And then moved to Masco. What does Masco actually stand for?
We like the name Mr. Air because air is what we sell, and that's what runs our product. But when we, in marketing and buying parts, people didn't know how to put us down as under A for air sweepers, M for Mr. It became a problem. So we just took the initials, Mr. Air Sweeper, came up with Masco. It was a little simpler name for buying stuff, and really that's how it came about. And then the models, we kind of always stayed with our model 1600, and then we offer that 1600 in different varieties, mainly a changing of the engine and the fan size. As the engine horsepower goes up, we increase the fan size according to the engine. So we went from 16 horses all the way up to, we've had them as high as 60 horse. So from there, we go from a 19-inch fan all the way to a 30-inch fan.
Right, and that, you have, it's quite the range of capabilities with the same essential model. It's how you spin it together.
Yeah, and we, at one time, we experimented with different size hoppers, but we always stayed with the same basic design. So if someone had to repair one, and he had an old one, and he bought a new one, it was very simple for him to see how to fix the new one, very similar to what he had, 15 years prior to that. And, we always looked at it, the parking lot has not changed. People drink beer and throw bottles on the parking lot today the same way they did in the 70s.
And they drink beer while they change diapers. That's the part I've never been able to understand.
Yeah, right. We don't quite see as many diapers as we used to see, but, the amount of litter, sand, is the same. The curb lines are the same. The big difference is the people that want this stuff picked up aren't willing to pay as much now. That's the sad thing. But if that's what, if we can create a better marketing for our customers, it's going to help them, because their equipment today costs many thousands of dollars more than it did, in the 80s and the 90s. And if you just look at the price of trucks, if you look at a Chevrolet truck in 1980 and then look at a Chevrolet truck in 2015, you see that percentage. And the sweepers have kind of went the same percentage. So it's a big nut for these guys to increase their workload according to their cost of equipment.
No question about that. And it's one of those things that is just not keeping up, and how we address that, it's a conundrum. I think everybody is trying to figure out and work on. And the fact is, though, that even these prices that are lower, if people knew what their costs were and actually knew how to compute their costs, I think that's one of the difficulties with the power sweeping industry. It's definitely blue collar, and a lot of these people running the business don't really understand. They come into it because they drove a truck in the military, and so they think, well, gee, I don't really like people, and I'm out in the middle of the night. I'll be just out there by myself in the middle of the night driving a truck. I can do that, but they don't think about it. They have to retire. They have to fix that equipment. They have to market by day. They have insurance and consumables, and on it goes. And once they figure out what those prices are, they'd say no to these lowball contracts.
As you said, it is really one of our biggest problems. Street sweeping is a whole different category, because there you might even have to have, if you go over 28,000 GVW, you need a LC license, and there's other problems but they can attract a little bit better driver. But we used to have a questionnaire if you wanted to be a parking lot sweeper, and it was pretty basic what you needed. You had to be able to be willing to go to work at 12 o'clock at night and sweep till daybreak. And you had to sweep weekends. And that eliminates half the people that apply for a job. They just don't want to do that. The people that make the most amount of money sweeping usually are owner-operators that don't get too big, that run their own equipment. They do pretty well. And then as they stretch out and start hiring help and their equipment starts breaking because of that, they're the ones that go through a real growth spurt until they get to a certain level where they can have their own mechanics, their own shops, their own equipment. And that's usually a person that may own 8 to 10 sweepers, and then they go from there up. Those are successful again. It's that in between when a guy hires, his first driver, puts his second sweeper on, his third sweeper on, his fourth, then he has a lot of problems. But if he can make it over the hump and get past that, then they start doing pretty good again. Throughout all these years, my brother, Mike Dyke, did my marketing for me, and he wrote a book on how to start a sweeping company. And to this day, we still get calls. He has not rewritten that book, and it works, because the things that worked then when he wrote the book is still true today. And Mike has experimented. He's experimenting right today as we speak on doing the things that he said. He started his own little sweeping business, and he's being quite successful at that. And it's simply doing, when the phone rings, you answer the phone. And when people ask you to do something, if you're willing to do it, then do it. And that's probably one of the key things in a contractor's life, is that he has to listen to what the customer says, and then do it. And that does not happen. They say, well, yeah, I'll sweep that, and then they don't show up for 4 days, or they don't sweep what they said they would sweep, and then they don't get the work. And it's kind of a tattletale thing in the, I'm talking now parking lot sweeping. Street sweeping is different because done during the day, they have people that go out there and monitor the counts. Parking lot sweeping is very low monitored. In some instances, it is monitored, and those companies probably get a little better work. But most of it's done by the middle of the night where nobody, you know, I used to have friends ask me, what are you doing? I said, well, I build sweepers. Well, I've never seen one. I said, well, because when you're up, they're already back home. And it's true of our industry.
Well, that's what I tell people is that is when you go to bed at night, this, you know, 5,000 sweepers come out across the country, and
right.
They're out there cleaning it up, and then, you know, nobody thinks any different about it when they're there at, you know, 6 o'clock at night to their store, and they empty their ashtray out on the ground, and then they come back the next morning and those ashes and cigarette butts and everything else are gone. They don't even think about where that disappears to.
Yeah, exactly. So the lot is clean, then somebody's done their job, and they've done it, you know, when nobody saw them do it. And then noise factor is a big factor. We're limited nowadays much more than we were in the past about when you can sweep, how much noise you make. All those are, you know, problems that our customers have to face nowadays that they never faced in the 80s. And, you know, as our environment is changing, so is our industry. And we have to keep monitoring that and change with the industry, with the demands of, you know, what people want nowadays.
So you want to make a prediction for the future? Do you think there are going to be automatic sweepers? You know, we have autonomous cars on the horizon here. We're going to be able to have a sweeper that is just like the little vacuum Zumbas that...
Well, you know, we're from the Bay Area, and nobody knows better than the people that live in the Bay Area. We have Google, Facebook, Apple, all in our back door. And I was just sold a sweeper to Moffett Field, where Google has taken over one of the largest airports there, the military, and they're running their Google cars all over that base right now with no people in them. So, yeah, if they were to do that with a pickup truck, and I put a sweeper on it, and they fire it up, you know, it would sweep. Now, whether or not Google is going to be smart enough to get all the parking lots figured out, that will take a long time. But they are figuring it out right now on highways. BMW is doing it. And whether that's in our future or not, you know, I'm not really sure. But like I say, the people are going to still drink beer, throw their bottles in the parking lot, make a mess, and that's good for us. I promote litter. I think that everybody should throw stuff in a parking lot. That's going to keep us around. So, you know, it's that part of it's not going to change. Equipment changes, environmental problems change, and we have to keep abreast with that. But
well, as you know, I was involved with Schwartz's marketing for about 15 years,
right.
And I was always amused with Mark Schwartz. He would never throw anything out if you're traveling down the road. But he would he would just throw stuff on the ground in a parking lot, and he called that job security.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's probably not what we should do, but we're not opposed to that.
That's it. A little nuance in the industry,
yeah.
And I believe that it will happen, and that we'll have that there'll be a driver in the truck. He'll hop out with his backpack blower, set the truck going. The sweeper going to sweep by itself in the areas that don't need to be backpack blow. The guy will blow off the sides and then the sweeper will come around to the edges. And it just seems like a natural progression. And, you know, and they may have the malls may then end up with everybody owns a little sweeper and they just park it there and it comes on automatically at night or something like that, too, to get the bulk of the litter. It's been interesting to me that I've had one of the things that I've been kind of known for is having an April Fool's sweeper story every year, and it's been intriguing to me the ones that have come to pass. One was that it showed different sweeper manufacturers vying for a NASA contract to be the sweeper that sweeps up the debris in space. And it was about 2 or 3 years later that there was none of the sweeper manufacturers, but in fact, NASA did put out a contract for that to get the debris out of space and for some kind of machine that would collect it up. Another one was a totally solar-powered sweeper, and it was about 4 years later that in China they have solar-powered sweepers out there that are in operation. The whole top of it are covered with solar panels and the sides, and I don't know if it completely powers them or if it's just a significant part of the power. So, well, the automatic sweeper can't be all that far behind, I think.
No, Tesla is made right down the street from our company in San Jose, and it's probably one of the most exotic electric cars out, and that company is moving very fast at many things it's built. They're going to outer space. They're running airplanes. They're doing a lot. Tesla is a very forward-thinking company, and we're aware of that. They're right in our back door.
Well, they may be the company that you partner with to do the first autonomous sweepers. Is there anything else we should talk about, Masco, while we're talking? What do you see for the future of your company? You're bringing it now to a second generation.
We're a family business, and in a family business, you have a lot of different challenges that you don't have probably in a normal corporation, and it's been fun to see our family grow. Almost everybody in my family has had something to do with parking lot sweeping, from delivering them to fixing them, to helping market them, and that's going to continue. I don't think we see a lot of changes in the near future. We're always looking to increase our production and to give the service that we've always given, and that's probably the challenge that we will face for the next few years. Changing in engines and manufacturing is a big thing. EPA is, on the engine builders' backs all the time. The Tier 4 has many challenges because of smog. The new engines burn much cleaner. They burn hotter, but they last almost forever. They take very little maintenance, and they're good engines, but to pay for this technology, that's what costs the money. If you buy a new truck today, a lot of the money you're paying for is the new technology, for the new smog, but trucks last much longer now than they did years ago. So those kind of changes, steel has cost more, stainless steel costs more, but the ways of manufacturing is changing drastically. Laser cutters, water cutters, plasma cutters have all changed the way that we manufacture. And it's all for the better, but to build them, the cost goes up. Labor costs more. So that's what we're faced with. So it kind of goes back to what I said. We have to make the owner of the parking lot understand that, and he has to be willing to pay that price.
I wish we had some more marketing that was based on how clean a place you could get into, but unfortunately, it seems like all marketing today is low price, and
yes,
people are getting to where they'd step over a dead rat in the doorway just to save a couple of bucks, and that's difficult.
One of the other problems that I hear my customers is, big companies like Home Depot, Walmart, they don't want to deal with the little local guy in town. They want to deal with all of the stores that they have, and they would like one contact. And that becomes, if you think about it, if a Home Depot, like in L.A., they got thousands of them. But they don't want to deal with 1,000 different contractors. They want to deal with one contractor. So that contractor has to figure out how to go about sweeping all of those stores. And they dictate the price that they're willing to pay. They don't come in and ask you, well, we don't care what it takes to clean this lot. Here's what we're willing to pay you. Well, that's a tough thing for a contractor to face, because he then has to go to someone that's willing to sweep that Home Depot lot for the price they're willing to pay and say, yeah, I'll do that. So he either cuts corners, or he's got to be a pretty smart guy to figure out how he's going to do that in the time that he's allotted to do it for what they're willing to pay. That's his challenge. He can't come in and say, well, I have this wonderful piece of equipment, and I'll do a great job for you, but I want $100. And they say, well, We only pay 35. So they really don't care how you do it. So we get no credit for having a great, beautiful, well-working machine on that parking lot because we're up against price. So pretty soon you see a guy out there with a backpack blower and a broom sweeping all the stuff in the corner and shoveling it into a garbage can and calling it good. So that's something that our industry is facing in the parking lot industry. Not so much in the street business because streets are long and, you know, you may have 20 miles of street sweeping and they're not going to do that with a garbage can and a broom.
Well, it goes back to the fact that you're out there at night and they don't really understand the complexities of what has to be done. They think you're just running around with a machine and you're not doing that either. You're having to backpack blow and clean out all the landscaping and those kinds of things too. They also don't know the difference if they have gravel in their landscaping versus if they have chips. You can blow stuff out of the gravel. You can't blow it out of the chips. And, you know, there are those kinds of, all those kinds of factors.
Yep. Emptying garbage cans, putting liners in garbage cans, cleaning doorways. You know, there's a lot to it.
Well, Masco has certainly made its mark in the United States market. It's nice that it's family-run business. Still, there's not many of those around there. Like you say, you have the deep pockets that a Schwartz, which is owned by Alamo Group, a public company. You have Elgin, that's owned by Federal Signal, a public company. The Timco, which also runs by an acronym like yours, the Young Manufacturing Company. They're still family operated, but it's a lot different too, since they're mostly in the large side of things. They certainly have entrance in the parking lot field too, but. I commend you for the growth that Masco has had around the country, and it continues to be ever more visible, the company does, in the national marketplace, and I think that's a good thing, too. So, and unless there's anything else we've missed, I guess we could call that good. Is there anything you think you'd like to add in or to close with?
One of the things that I commend in our company is it's not so much the owners, it's the product name, but the product is made by the people that work for you, you know, and that's where, you know, we've been very fortunate. I had my brother Mike with me for over 30 years. That stability is very important, and people that have run our parts departments, stayed with our customers for all these years, and those are the big part of a company because that's who your customers deal with. You know, so I always want to give credit for all of the employees that we've had that have stayed with us for years and years and years, and that, you know, we took care of the needs of our people. Company too is trade-ins, and those are not easy to do because people want trade-ins. That gives them a price that they can afford, but yet they need something that's going to run for a few more years until they make enough money to buy a new one or to use that as a backup. So you have to go through it. And, you know, we do a lot of business and use sweepers, and it's kind of a business all of its own where you have to look at it, what's wrong with it, fix it, and get it back out there on the road so that somebody else can run for another 3 or 4 years with it. And that's a big part of our company. I think I failed to
Your refurbishment and another thing about a company like yours that's doing refurbishment is that you have to refurbish this old beat up sweeper well enough that when they are ready to buy one, they're going to come back and buy it from you because they'll have been happy enough for the value of the refurbishment that you brought them.
Our sweeper has been simple enough to where one of the big things that we do is, you know, we can wear out two trucks with one sweeper. The sweeper is not so complicated that we can remove it, buy a new truck, and do what's bad or broken on the sweeper, put it back on a new truck, and that's the thing that gives that guy reliability. He knows he's not going to break down. You know, he can go another 200,000 miles with that truck, and by then, he's probably ready for a new sweeper. So a lot of our sweepers go through two trucks in the life of one sweeper. So that's been something that our customers, I know, that have owned our equipment have been able to do, and it's probably what's, you know, kept them alive.
Well, yeah, that's right. Operating your business like that just certainly does make sense. Well, we've been speaking with Larry Dyke, and Larry is the owner of Masco Sweepers, California-based. They sell all across the United States and probably anywhere else. If you happen to be located somewhere else, you could give them a call, and they'd be willing to talk about how to get that sweeper to you wherever you are. You'll see the contact information for the company in our storyline, and as one of the pioneers of the parking lot sweeping industry, it's really a pleasure to talk about how Masco Sweepers got started as Mr. Air and have become such a force in the marketplace. So thank you very much, Larry.
Thank you.